Javit.
Welcome to Javit. Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me is James. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We most recently talked about The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. Before that was Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice. The Third Man was something we also recently talked about, and both Cloverfield movies were discussed in one podcast. So you can check those all out. You can follow us on Twitter, at The MacGuffin Man, and you can tell everybody you've ever met in your entire life about us, because we would appreciate it. Theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
James, what's happening?
Oh, we're talking about Galaxy Quest today.
Okay.
I almost said Space Jam. Wishful thinking.
You will never get me to do that podcast. Do you know how many fucking friendships that podcast would ruin for me?
Really?
Oh, people love Space Jam, and I would probably be unkind to it.
Okay. It's a hook situation all over again.
Yeah, our non-existent hook podcast.
the infamous lost MacGuffin Man episode, yeah, because exactly. It never existed.
It will only be played at a convention 20 years from now when we are reappearing. And they need to fill time when I'm double booked myself.
Oh no, you're out drinking, we know that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of the two of us, I would definitely be the one that would sell cocaine to kids, so I feel like that characterization works.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about here today, James?
Galaxy Quest.
All right.
Yes, your spot on cocaine selling joke. Yep. Was about Tim Allen.
1970s Tim Allen.
Yeah. Did you see who almost got these parts? Did you read the production of this?
I read, I saw that Alec Baldwin was, like Harold Ramis was the original director, and Alec Baldwin was who he wanted to be the lead, which is awesome. I would have loved that. You know? Not that Tim Allen's bad in this movie, and I don't have the problems with Tim Allen that some of my friends seem to, but like he's fine in this, but... I mean, I feel like my opinions on Alec Baldwin are pretty well known on this podcast, that I think he's an incredible comedic actor. So this would have been good. And this is right around the time when he's starting to get into comedy. I think State and Maine might be 1999 as well, which is the David Mamet movie that he's in, where he plays an actor that takes themselves too seriously. That's funny.
Yeah. That could be good.
Yeah.
And I guess that was it. From my understanding, that's pretty much why Harold Ramis is not the director of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
DreamWorks was very adamant that Tim Allen do it. And
it was just so, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a nice 90s tidbit. Like, a studio was really adamant that Tim Allen be the lead. You know, like, it just seems so foreign now. But it's
I was
really
on the
fun.
Telephone with Blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to Jeffrey Katzenberg on a landline. He was really into Home Improvement.
I mean, this was a you know, we talked a little bit about the history there, but I guess it was a script written on spec by David Howard. Mm-hmm. And Mark Johnson, the producer, really seemed to like the concept, but not the actual movie, or not the actual script. So they bought it and got Bob Gordon to rewrite the whole thing, and it seems that it is very different than that script, other than kind of the main concept of aliens thinking a space TV show is a true documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And so DreamWorks wanted Harold Ramis to direct, and as we said, that Tim Allen sticking point. And then Dean Pariseau or Parasot, do you know?
I do not know.
Okay, I'm going with Pariseau.
Okay. It definitely makes him sound better. Like, it makes him sound more fancy, I suppose. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Dean Parasol. yeah, and some other casting stuff. Sam Rockwell almost wasn't in this movie, but Kevin Spacey convinced him to stay in.
Yeah, I read that too. I enjoyed that. Spaceman knows what's good.
Sam Rockwell knows what's good.
Like, I'm very pro Rockwell as well.
Right. Yeah, I know. I know you are. Yeah. But the world needs to be more so.
Well, I don't think he wants the world to know so. I think he's He's been choosy on purpose. Anyway, sorry. Because he's clearly got movie star charisma and is handsome enough to be a movie star. Like, I don't know. I think he could have been if he wanted to be.
Yeah, there's a certain weirdness about him, I think, that... because he feels he couldn't be a leading man. I've been listening to some interviews and reading about him a lot lately. So, yeah. But anyway, even pretty late up into the production of this movie, this was supposed to be a darker, more violent R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
Yeah,
see...
there's some pretty clear ADR to accomplish, or not even like even just to change the rating. Like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, I forget the character's name, but it was Daryl Mitchell's character, says, "I'm sick of this shit," or something like that, or whatever.
You're so full of it.
Yeah, and it's so clearly ADR'd because it was, "You're so full of shit," clearly, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think the Sigourney Weaver, when she says, "Well, fuck that,"
mm-hmm.
later on.
Yeah.
I think that's, I think it's really funny. Like maybe even intentionally so, or could be intentionally so, that it's just a really bad edit.
Yeah,
you know, like this movie obviously plays with TV conventions and kind of self-reflexive as a piece of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of, you know, lightening something up after the fact, but leaving that so clearly because it's just a shot of the two of them.
Yeah.
Nothing else is moving.
Yeah, and they're like looking at the camera more or less.
Yeah. It's perfect for it. So yeah. I find that really funny.
Yeah, I think that's giving the filmmakers like slightly too much credit. Like I think they had to do it regardless. And I think that's just a little bit further than this movie would go, you know, to purposely ADR something poorly. You know, it just seems weird. But you're right that it is in line. By chance, you know.
Yeah, well, one of the first movies to have a website, you know, for it. Mm-hmm. Which is very common practice now, pretty much everything does, but this was in 1999.
Yeah, and it seems crazy because Stargate came out in what, like 94, and that was the first movie with a website, and this is 5 years later, you know?
Really?
Yeah, so that I read that too, and it struck me as odd.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, back to the point about how intentional it was. it was one of those purposely bad websites with, you know, HTML coding mistakes done intentionally and kind of meant to look like a fan site and not a real, you know, promotional tool by the studio. So. Yeah,
had a real GeoCities vibe.
Yeah, and I did read a pretty good analysis of this movie, which I think we'll get to later, that... It does kind of what you're talking about, giving it a lot more credit than what it deserves. But mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty interesting take.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like this movie overall?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I saw it in theaters when it came out, and I remembered really enjoying it. And I still enjoyed it watching it today. It's a fun little time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you would like it at all, actually.
No. Always been pro Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, and it's one that with Alan Rickman's recent death, kind of the way it always happens when a famous actor or comedian or musician or something dies, you end up hearing a lot more about their work and people reminiscing about, you know, what their favorite stuff was. And I found a lot of people still talking about Galaxy Quest even more than mm-hmm. I thought they would. And I understand, you know, nostalgia is a very important factor, but I didn't think people growing up having, you know, watching this movie again would like it as much.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the thing with that is that a lot of the people that do like this movie and did like this movie are the type of people to never stop liking the thing they loved 16 years ago, 17 years ago.
What do you mean?
Like the way that Star Trek fans continue to go to conventions 20 years later, you know?
Right.
And I think it played to a very specific... type of culture fan that it's got a longevity built into it, you know.
Yeah, and neither you or I are big Star Trek people. I mean, not that you didn't watch much of the show growing up, right?
I have seen, I think, maybe one full episode of any Star Trek ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even just knowing about some of the things about Star Trek and, you know, it being so present in culture, you still get a lot of the humor of the Star Trek jokes. And there are so many in here. And then reading more about it, there's, you know, 50 I didn't pick up on just because I'm not as immersed in the lore. But it's a movie you can enjoy without it, but it's, yeah, as you said, there's a lot more for people who are that kind of person, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I liked watching this movie. I could have dealt, like, if I had never seen it again, it wouldn't have been a real problem for my life. But had I been a Star Trek fan and saw this movie, I feel like I would have liked it way more. You know, just because it seems the way they do the references are very something that I would enjoy if I got them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but even the ones like about, you know, his shirt coming off in the fight very unexpectedly.
Yeah.
You know, things like that have just been so pervasive in pop culture that, I mean, that's just a testament to how big Star Trek was and how rabid those fans were. And I think a lot of writers and a lot of animators and a lot of people who would grow up to make things that we would watch, I think there's a big overlap in that fandom and or that group of people in the Star Trek fandom.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How'd you like Tim Allen as a William Shatner?
I enjoyed him. Like, it's fine. It's, you know, he does a very serviceable job. There's nothing about it that I loved and nothing about it that I hated. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand that the whole story of him, you know, overhearing a discussion in a bathroom about how pathetic everybody is and how his co-stars really dislike him is based on a true story.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, which is enjoyable.
Yeah. And a total bummer.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, other than plot points as well, I think we have not just the show, but some of the real Star Trek actors kind of reflected in this movie.
Yeah.
We have Leonard Nimoy as Alan Rickman, you know, the real actor being kind of typecast for a particular alien role.
Yeah. You can never take off the costume, it seems.
Yeah, well, even when he's at home on the telephone.
I know.
Yeah, and
but he's just such a dedicated actor that even in this role that he hates, when he's talking to a fellow performer from that show, he has to be in full garb.
Yeah, he's still doing method 18 years after the fact.
Yep. One of Strasberg's most favorite students, Alexander
Dan. I think another thing about this movie and its connection to Star Trek is that a lot of people see it as a pretty loving spoof.
Yes.
You know, it's not, you know, just shredding it apart and talking about how bad it was, but taking some of those elements, poking fun at them, but still idolizing it. And I think in the end, one of the big things is about the fans being important, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. The fan, Justin Long, saves the day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we get that pretty long crowd shot. I mean, it seemed long to me, just reinforcing that sense of community and how the fans are the ones that make these, you know, these big subcultures last.
Yep.
And we have these actors who are kind of over it for the most part, but doing it for the money. And it's, you know, you can grumble all you want about, you still have to do these conventions, but you're choosing to do it and you're getting paid for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That doesn't exist without a very rabid fan base.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And this is our first Justin Long.
Is it?
Yeah.
The first movie that he has been in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, is this a thing that it's our first movie with Justin Long in it?
Oh,
it might be. Who knows?
Did we talk about the shitty Die Hard? I mean, one of the shitty Die Hards?
No, I don't think so. We talked about the shittiest Die Hard.
Right?
Yeah.
Talk about that Mac campaign?
No, we didn't. But we did talk about Jeepers Creepers. But yeah, Justin Long is in this movie, and that made me happy. I love Justin Long.
Yeah, he's good at this, too.
Yeah, for sure. And in general, I think he's... I mean, we were talking about Sam Rockwell a little bit earlier. I think Justin Long is also a pretty underrated dude.
Yeah,
he's a very funny dude, and also like a very talented physical comedian, which they always try and throw into his movies. Not at this point, but later on.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, that's it on Justin Long for me.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a huge part. Yeah. And like, we should talk about Malthazar, Enrico Colantoni.
Oh, he was amazing.
Yeah, he's really, really good in this, right?
Oh, so good. Like, coming in hot, too. Like, just at the convention and Tim Allen, like, poking him in the belly. That sound that he made was so yeah. funny. Everything he does in this movie is perfect. He's amazing.
Yeah, no, I thought he was so good. And I just kind of watching this movie and going into it, I was looking for the things that made people still like it and made people like it, even not just for the fact that they liked it when they were, you know, 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just really funny. I mean, a lot of the aliens are, but he's so good. And my understanding is that the whole voice thing was really his idea.
Yeah.
And he just tried it one day on set and everyone said, oh, nope, absolutely. That that needs to continue. Like, it sounds like he's singing, but it's monotone. And yeah, everything about him is just wonderful in this.
Yeah, truly great performance.
From someone I haven't seen that much of since stopping watching Just Shoot Me.
What, you're not a big Flashpoint fan?
Believe it or not, I'm not. Yeah. Oh, and well, Tony Shalhoub, your boy.
Yeah, my boy Monk.
Was he high the entire time?
I don't know, man. I have so many questions about him. Like, why is... I think that they're all just variations of why is he so chill? Why is Shalhoub so chill? I'm used to him yelling at Trailer Howard because she didn't let him turn the lights on and off 8 times before he solved the case or whatever.
I was trying to remember if there's some scene about that he's a stoner or something. Like,
yeah, I thought maybe I just missed it.
That's what I assumed. And I've been kind of looking around and there's no, like, it's not his personality. Like, I don't know what it is, but he's just hungry and super chill and giggling the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've got nothing further to offer.
Okay, no, yeah. Sometimes you see the things I miss, but
yeah, he does have a big head. You're right. Oh, yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I don't even know. I haven't done the study, but
okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in that group hug scene, you'll get a good comparison. So yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this theory that I came across. And I will credit the person because I did not come up with any of this, mm-hmm. but I thought it was very, very interesting. Great name, too.
Guy Fleegman?
To be taken seriously. No. Okay. Shit Sandwich Reviews. blogspot.ca, which I will say is a Spinal Tap reference. Okay. So good on him.
Yeah.
But no, he had a interesting theory about this. And is this the thing I mentioned earlier about maybe a lot of thought going into this movie to work on kind of a metatextual level? Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the auteur theory on this podcast.
Once or twice.
Yes. And we've mentioned that, you know, it started in France and the Cahiers du Cinéma but made it over to America through a certain few film critics. Mm-hmm. Can you think of the most prominent American film critic at the responsible for doing a lot to bring it over?
I might be wrong about it, but Andrew Saris is the one that comes to mind.
Yes. Okay. And do you remember the name of the lead bad guy in this movie?
Saris.
Yes. Okay. So I think you can kind of see where this is headed.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is – his reading is about this – about Galaxy Quest kind of being – not necessarily a backlash to auteur theory, but maybe just a kind of a call to look at things again. Mm-hmm. And it's about how something we talked about earlier is how this movie really thanks the fans and, you know, kind of that communal experience that it's not just a director who makes a movie and then that's the end of things, but it's between the fans, it's between, you know, especially in this case about the crew and the writers and all the people involved in making a film. And even if we're going with the idea that it's one person's vision, it's a lot of different people putting work into it. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, Saris kind of stands in as Andrew Saris, standing in as Auteur Theory in general.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, Saris here is pretty much running the show, you know, for the aliens. Most of them don't even speak. There's a couple to kind of get exposition out near the end of the movie from lines from other people, but it's really him doing everything. So mm-hmm. he's our director. His force is, you know, entirely dependent on him and his views and the way he wants to run things. Whereas with the Galaxy Quest people, you know, the Thermians, we have a leader. You know, we have Tim Allen, Jason Naismith as the commander. But in the beginning, he's very selfish, you know, trying to do everything on his own, trying to be the star and, you know, at times literally being the only one in the spotlight. But this movie is about him learning to appreciate the other people and, you know, teamwork and communication and not just being the central star. And, you know, we see as they fight back that he listens to them more and he appreciates them more. And, you know, everyone has their different roles, but they all are working towards the same goal, right?
Correct.
And, you know, we can look at everyone on his, you know, in his crew as, you know, literally someone on a crew, on a film crew. They all have their specialties. They all do different things. They all have a job, but they're all working towards the same thing. And again, under the direction of a single person, mm-hmm. but as a team. Mm-hmm. And literally at one point at the beginning of the movie, when answering questions about how we got out of something in one of the episodes, he says, "Without a crew, I'm not a commander." And he's really kind of, you know, pointing towards this idea that there is someone in charge, but without a whole crew to do it, nothing's going to get accomplished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, it's about them kind of working towards getting this one thing. And it does really kind of, you know, position the fans, as we said, as something that is an important part of this process. And the Thermians in this movie are kind of the most devoted fans in the universe.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? To take the fiction of the show as the literal truth, as, you know, as they say, historical documents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just kind of, this film really plays out as an extrapolation of that idea, this hardcore fandom, you know, being so devout and so interested and being truly the ones that actually understand the universe enough to negotiate it and to fully understand everything about it in a way that ends up saving everybody involved with it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good reading that, again, it seems accidental, but I find just a lot of things line up very nicely. And we have, you know, the Omega 13 as essentially a rewind button. And yeah. I don't know. I just want to get your take on that theory because we do spend a lot of time talking about Auteur Theory. And I thought that was an interesting one for this.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I certainly don't disagree with it. I mean, the character Saris is straight up named after Andrew Saris as well.
Do you know that for a fact?
The producer also produced The Natural, which Andrew Saris hated. And so the producer changed the villain's name to Saris. My understanding via my hard-hitting Wikipedia research. So, you know, take it with a grain of IMDb sand, but that is the story behind that. And yeah, I certainly agree with it. And I think one of the things that people always forget about the Auteur Theory is that, or, you know, tend to not think about, is that any smart director always talks about how important their crew is to them, you know? We always end up boiling it down to the director because it makes it easier for people like us to talk about it, fans, critics, whatever. And just because it's easier and more interesting to keep saying Fincher than it is to say like Ren Kleiss and Kirk Baxter and Jeff Cronenweth and all the other people in his crew. Right. Yeah. Because it's just makes it easier to talk about. And that's part of what the auteur theory did, was allowed us to talk about movies in a more interesting way. And yeah, of course, directors understand the importance of their crew. I think only Ridley Scott is the only one that seemed to talk about it in a way that it's like it's him and it's only him. And that could just be that Ridley Scott charm rubbing off on his actual logical answer. But
and calling the fans the nerds.
Yeah, exactly. Love that guy. But yeah. But yeah, it's I don't know, it was a tool of criticism, and I love the auteur theory. But I think you have to kind of understand that just by believing in the auteur theory doesn't make you think that one person is doing everything, you know?
Yeah, and yeah. That a cinematographer has no input on a movie just because he's not the director, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't devalue that theory at all. It's just to point out that Andrew Saris didn't believe these things, you know, like that that the director does literally everything, because Andrew Saris was a very smart man. You know?
Yes, so. And appreciated the crew more than Sam Rockwell is. Crewman 6,
yeah.
Thankless job of the extras just there to die and receive none of the credit.
Yeah, the red shirts, if you will.
Yeah. You got anything else on Galaxy Quest?
Did you notice on Justin Long's desktop when he's talking about, or sorry, when he's talking to, what's Tim Allen's name? Nesmith. I was going to call him Nesbitt. But on his desktop, he has like folders. One is, I don't know, something, and then another one is homework, and then the last one is weird stuff. And I just thought that was a really, really funny funny folder to have on the desktop of like a, I don't know, 15-year-old kid's computer.
No, I really did enjoy, can you build a rudimentary lathe in the fight scene for some reason?
No, there's a lot of really good like little stuff all throughout this movie. Like there's an early walk and talk. I think it's when they're in the electronics store, when I think Sigourney Weaver and Tim Allen are walking, and it's just the very beginning of the shot, and Sam Rockwell's talking to a woman, and right at the beginning of the shot, she says, "But you live with your mother." As they're like, "What?" And like that was really funny. And I mean, it's you know, not very in depth, but I mean, you addressed it. I enjoy the whole Alan Rickman thing with the very serious actor feeling trapped in something that's beneath them. And I also really enjoyed the guy who lives in his past glories sort of thing with Tim Allen. I always enjoy seeing, I'm always interested in seeing both of those things portrayed. And even though they don't dive too deep into either side of it, I enjoyed it. And yeah. I thought Sigourney Weaver was super funny. I don't know if we said her name yet, but she was great.
No, I don't think we have, actually.
Yeah, she had some really good lines, and she nailed them all, you know, like she was great. And when she's talking about how she's got one job, and yes, it's dumb, but I'm gonna do it, that was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
That was very good.
Yeah
And you know, one of her roles is just to be, I mean, when she talks about this as her role in Galaxy Quest, to, you know, just be a good looking person to look at, and says, you know, they interview me and all they talk about is how my boobs fit in my costume and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then near the end of the movie, as the it starts winding down, as the action picks up, sure enough, her shirt becomes unzipped about halfway down.
Yeah, of course. Which would take like 5 seconds to remedy. Not even that. Just zip it back up.
Well, and I thought it was funny. Missy Pyle, mm-hmm. In this movie had her role expanded very greatly after they realized that Sigourney Weaver was the only like female with a talking role, pretty much.
Yeah.
So another bit of self-reflexiveness there, I thought was funny.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Yeah. With Alan Rickman's character, I did enjoy, you know, he thinks all this is beneath him, but it means so much to the fans. And, you know, when we have the Thermians standing in as the fans, you know, one of them's dying, and he'll do the line everyone wants him to hear, and, you know, add all the gravity he has to it, because he really cares. I enjoyed that part too.
Yeah, for sure. So how long do you think until like Marvel or DC or somebody, their Hall H presentation is actually like a giant ship crashing into Hall H, like at the end of Galaxy Quest?
Yeah, I mean,
how many years off are we?
Oh, I mean, I need to know the logistics of the building, but
just watch the PaceyCon video again. He gives a good tour.
I'll say 1 year.
1 year? Like next year?
Well, yeah, we'll see it before we see the Galaxy Quest TV show.
I think that is probably a correct statement. So thank you for listening to MacGuffin. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about something else.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.